hope. It's basically a wisp of nothing that protects us from the rest of the universe. And we all breathe out of the same bubble. You know, we're all buddy breathing on the same scuba tank. And sometimes we sort of forget that it's completely shared. And the fuse to come, I was outside of a spacewalk in the dark, and I'd shut off the lights of my spacesuit so I could see from Earth and across all the way to Melbourne and up across Sydney. But instead of seeing the lights of South Australia, we drove through the southern lights, and they were going past my feet. Like we were plowing through the southern lights coming around the curve of the world. It's just so surreal, so surprisingly otherworldly. It's hard to convince myself that this is our planet. This happens all the time, and it's right here if you just take a moment to see it. And you see the world, you're in the darkness half the time. So a city like Sydney just glows in the darkness, and you can see the harbor and the airport of it. And it's the space station is a magnificent laboratory and an amazing observation point of the world. But one other thing I wanted to talk about, and then we'll land the spaceship and open it up for questions. But things go wrong, especially when life is complex, and it's complex for everybody here. And one of the things I really tried to put of use in the book was, how do you prepare for the realities of life? Because in my life, in everyone's life, that distant goal you have, that's perfection. Your life is not going to go that way. Things will go wrong, guaranteed. And how do you prepare for things in life to go wrong? And for me, the key to it is not to visualize success. The key to being successful in life is to visualize failure. What is the most probable thing that is going to go wrong? And how am I going to deal with it? How am I going to either avoid that thing going wrong or deal with it when it does happen? And that's the life of an astronaut. Visualize what you're trying to do, but then say, you know what, there's a really good shot that this is going to go wrong. So let's sit down and figure out how we're going to deal with that. And practice it. If you got an hour, I mean, if we knew that the front row here, that you 10 people, that one of you is going to have a heart attack in the next 40 minutes, if you knew that might happen, you would change your behavior for the next 40 minutes. You could get online and find out, what are the symptoms of a heart attack? What are the right first 5 things to do? One person could be delegated to call 911. Someone could maybe go get some medicine, get ourselves prepared, and then you could practice it. Okay, you're having a heart attack. Okay, everybody practice. Learn what you need to learn. Sit back down. Now you're having a heart attack. Practice. And do it over and over and over again until 40 minutes have gone by. And then when that person has a heart attack, your reaction is completely different than it would have been. There's not panic. There's not misunderstanding. You behave differently because you visualized failure and then practiced it. And that's how we fly spaceships. We do that. We prepare for heart attacks and their equivalent for years and years and years. And it's the only way we can successfully fly in space. And one day up on the space station, Pavel, whose bedroom was right here, was looking out the side of the spaceship, and he saw something really weird. And he came floating up to me, and I didn't speak English very well. Said, or something. somebody saying that this is what Pavel was looking out the window. So that's not good, to have your spaceship spewing stuff out into the universe. And so what would you do? You're the commander of a ship. So I called Houston. Houston, we have a problem. And I talked to Heather Rarick. She was the lead flight director. We could see we were leaking liquid ammonia, the main coolant of the whole spaceship. And without liquid ammonia, we can't generate electricity. We were going to have to shut down the electrics. We were going to have to abandon ship. A huge deal. So I knew we were going to have to do a spacewalk. And in fact, the next day, we woke up about 12 hours later, and Houston, which normally takes 8 days to generate a spacewalk because they're dangerous and complicated, the next morning we woke up and Houston said, "We're sending you outside on a spacewalk tomorrow on one day's notice because the leak is so bad we don't have any choice. We don't have a plan yet. We don't know what we're going to do, but we have to send you out tomorrow. We're really sorry, but, you know, get ready." So that should have been fear-inducing. But we had gained skills. We'd become competent for years. We had visualized failure and practiced over and over again. And I'd given Chris Cassidy complete ownership of the airlock when he came on board. I said to him, "The airlock is yours. This part of the spaceship, you make every single decision in there." And so for months, even though we didn't know what was coming, Chris had been just on his own time. When he had a few free minutes, he'd been preparing the airlock. So when Houston said, "We're sending out tomorrow," instead of being like chihuahuas in there, nervous and terrified, we were ready to go and to go outside. And I was Canada's first spacewalker. It is a magnificent human experience to pull yourself out into the universe alone. To be holding on. I mean, you're one link to humanity you have in one hand, holding on to the spaceship. And the whole world is just rolling by next to you in colors and textures that are constantly silently changing next to you. It's mesmerizing to look at. And then the other direction is the universe. And it's so palpably black. You felt like if you put your hand into it, you would get the universe on your hand. It's just so deep and black. And you are in between those two things. Or it's a stupefyingly beautiful glimpse of what the rest of the universe really looks like. But it's also a dangerous place to work. On Chris's left shoulder, it's plus 150 degrees Celsius. And on his right shoulder, it's minus 150 degrees Celsius in the shade. And you're constantly sort of peppered by or sandblasted by tiny micrometeorites and orbital debris. And the suit is wicked. The suit is like it resists every move you make because it's a big balloon. It is nothing like Sandra Bullock in the movie Gravity, where she comes floating out of her spacesuit in her little boy underwear, looking all sweet, and her hair looks nice. This suit beats you up. You come out of the suit bloody from the wear and tear on your skin. Tom, out on the spacewalk, came in. Both his hands were crippled up due to nerve damage. It is wicked. But we sent those guys outside for 6.5 hours. They removed the big leaking section, got a little ammonia sprayed on them, installed. We had a spare about the size of a refrigerator, installed it, and brought them back inside the next day, slowly, with our fingers crossed, repressurized the ammonia, and we'd fix the leak. And in fact, we fixed it fast enough that we didn't even have to repressurize. We didn't have to put new ammonia into the lines. We'd saved the space station. And we had visualized every permutation of heart attack that exists for years and years. And yet the only real obstacle was this one day. But we don't regret any of the training is wasted. By visualizing facing failure and getting ready for it. When it came time for us to really pull on the oars, we were ready. And that's how I live my whole life, is looking ahead, thinking of what's liable to not go the way that I want to, and start working on it now, while I have time, to be ready for the eventuality that is actually life.